Dear listener, we accept the fact that you have to sacrifice a whole hour to listen to whatever it is we're about to do wrong, and what we will do is wrong. You see us the way you want to see us, in the simplest of terms, in the most convenient definitions, but we found out that each one of us is a brain.
An athlete.
A princess.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Geek Movie Club.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Geek Movie Club, episode 9, the podcast that believes...
That's a big twinkie.
I'm David McVeigh.
I'm Richard Gray.
I'm Dave Long. I was just thinking, how hard is it not to break into that song when it gets down to the end of it?
Yeah.
You just want to be like, don't you forget about me.
I'm fist in the air at the end of every
song.
It's
such a shame that it's probably not going to be our theme forever, but that's all right.
That doesn't matter. You'll always remember the time that it was.
That's true.
The theme.
This is our clubhouse. Club is in session. We should stress that we actually almost took another week off this week, but something happened this week.
And we were attacked by wolves.
Something happened this week, and we kind of felt that we needed to record. It is very late at night. This is going to be a very short show. We should say that right up front. But something happened this week that was extraordinarily sad, especially
yes.
for us, because we are massive geeks. Harold Ramis passed away.
I think I speak for all of us that he was an essential part. I can get serious for a minute here. He was an essential part of my comedy upbringing. I don't know how many times I watched Ghostbusters as a kid, how many times I watched Stripes without fully understanding all the jokes as a kid. Watching it again last night, it is still sharp as hell. Harold Ramis. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it. Harold Ramis, apart from those two movies that I just mentioned, started on SCTV, but as a director and a writer, you know, films like Groundhog Day.
National Lampoon's original Vacation.
You know, he's turned up in things
Caddyshack.
Like Caddyshack, of course. He's turned up
in... I'm all right.
He's turned up in things like, you know, he told Jack Nicholson he was crazy and As Good As It Gets. He pretty much did the same thing to Seth Rogen in Knocked Up. You know,
what is it? If it's in the ground, then it's fine to smoke.
Yep. In fact, I don't think I'll wait any longer. I put together a little audio tribute to Harold Ramis. It goes for about 3 minutes, guys, but it's Harold Ramis. It's all gold. Harold, we'll miss you.
I'm Maurice Green, licensed chiropractor. Did you know that each year more than 20,000 people die? Well, this year you may have passed away without even being aware of it. Here are 7 simple warning signs that may spell the difference between life and death for you. 1. Prolonged absence of physical activity. 2. Loss of appetite. 3. Loss of sight and hearing. 4. Increasing stiffness of joints and muscles. 5. Relaxed attitudes toward personal hygiene. 6. Inability to remember the previous 5 warning signs. And 7. The unexplained presence of coins on your eyelids. If you answered yes to any or all of these warning signs, you may already be dead. Don't be the last to know.
Good morning. This is Basic English. My name is Russell Ziske, and I'm going to be your instructor for the next 5 weeks. So I want you to call me Russell, and I'm going to call you by your first names, because frankly, I'd have a pretty tough time pronouncing some of your last names.
I bet you like to read a lot, too.
Print is dead.
Oh, that's very fascinating to me. I read a lot myself. Some people think I'm too intellectual, but I think it's a fabulous way to spend your spare time. I also play racquetball. Do you have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
You happy about that?
Absolutely. Delighted.
This is a disaster.
No, this is not a disaster.
It is.
An earthquake is a disaster. Your grandmother having Alzheimer's so bad she doesn't even know who the fuck I am. That's a disaster. This is a good thing. This is a blessing.
I have a vision for how my life would go, and this definitely is
Is this your vision? Are you living your vision right now?
I am kind of living my vision.
Wow, that is sad, I'm telling you.
I'm worried, Ray. It's getting crowded in there, and all my recent data points to something big on the horizon.
What do you mean, the big?
Well, let's say this Twinkie represents the normal amount of psychokinetic energy in the New York area. According to this morning's sample, it would be a Twinkie 35 feet long, weighing approximately 600 pounds.
That's a big Twinkie. Are either of you homosexuals?
You mean like flaming or?
Well, it's a standard question we have to ask.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Yeah, would they send us someplace special?
Ray has gone bye-bye, Egon. What have you got left?
Sorry, Beckman. I'm terrified beyond the capacity for rational thought. Okay, that's really very good. I'd like to try it just one more time, and then we'll call it a day. I met her on a Monday, and my heart stood still. Somebody told me that her name was Jill.
Bye-bye,
Harold Ramis.
You will be missed.
You are very, very missed already. To quote the late, great Kevin Smith. Oh, no, he's not dead yet. To quote Kevin Smith, massive, massive bucket of win.
Absolutely.
For that man. Because, honestly, watching Stripes again last night, I realized how many times I watched it as a kid. I realized how much that movie actually influenced my comedy, my sense of humor, my everything I like about those two guys, Ramis and Murray, you know, how much a part of me they are.
And Reitman, let's not forget. I mean, this was like the
exactly.
I mean, we had Animal House before, but Stripes was for me.
And Reitman and Aykroyd, you know, yeah. They were all, you know, and the late, great, I mean, watching Stripes is such a bittersweet thing because John Candy and
Warren Oates,
you know, and it's just... You know, all those people no longer with us and huge, huge, huge parts of our lives.
This is the saddest part is I wasn't paying close enough attention because I actually didn't know he was sick.
Nor did I.
And when he died, it was like, pardon? How did this happen?
Well, look, you know, I think that he'd kept it quite close because there'd been all this talk about Ghostbusters 3 for so long. And really, Aykroyd had to have known, you know, he was sick during that time, unless Aykroyd really hadn't been keeping contact with him. You know, and I think it's a shame because we all kind of in our minds didn't really want Ghostbusters 3 to happen, but all of us kind of remembered the magic of those three on screen, or four with Ernie Hudson being on screen together.
Who remembers Ernie Hudson?
Ernie Hudson, I think, is the only person who really, really wants Ghostbusters 3 to happen outside of Dan Aykroyd. Yeah. But honestly, you know, the comedy world is a little smaller this week as a result of Harold Ramis's passing. But we have this massive body of work, a very small sample of which we
felt we had to mark this passing, and this is why we've gotten together to record in the middle of the night. And we thought, well, you know what, we'll get together. There was actually a point where we thought we were not going to do a show, and I thought, no, we have to. We have to talk about this. This is, we don't want to bring the mood of the show down. The show is always kind of a chaotic, you know, fun mess. Particularly last week's show. But I felt it was necessary that we needed to do this, and Richard had already put this package together, so he felt it was necessary. And I thought, well, we were doing panels anyway. Let's just do this. So while we're here, you know, rest in peace, Mr. Ramis. You will be missed.
I just want to mention, we didn't mention Groundhog Day.
Very briefly, yeah.
I felt for like a long time, that's one of the best screenplays ever written.
It really is. Yeah. Groundhog Day is a perfect film in a lot of ways because its central theme, you know, it's the repetition, it gets better every time you watch it. You know, and I think the more times you watch Groundhog Day, the more I find in it, the more I get out of it. Little things you start to notice. Such a well-scripted movie, such a well-directed movie. I think he has a brief cameo in that as well.
His pacing is perfect. I mean, he is a comedy gold.
And we're not...
You mentioned Ghostbusters, but for me it's Groundhog Day because that's the movie I watch so often when I was little.
And I certainly watch that because I'm a massive Bit Bill Murray fan as well. But he also directed things like Analyze This and Analyze That. He did an episode of The Office. You know, his last film... You know, which is not the one he'll be remembered for, was Year One.
He definitely won't be remembered for that.
But as writing credits, you know, lots of National Lampoon stuff, Delta House. You know, we mentioned Meatballs, Caddyshack, Stripes, The Rodney Dangerfield Show, Ghostbusters, Back to School, Club Paradise, Armed and Dangerous, the Ghostbusters sequel and Caddyshack. Both of the sequels for that. You know, Groundhog Day, which we mentioned, you know. He even, you know, did the Ghostbusters, co-wrote the Ghostbusters video game with Dan Aykroyd. Both of them felt so strongly about the concept they came back to provide the script for that.
Yeah.
You know, so we do kind of have a Ghostbusters 3 in a way from that. As I said, Ghostbusters, Stripes, my seminal films. I can't see any more nice things about him, but he will be missed, but we'll always have his movies. So,
absolutely.
Lots
and
of them.
And I think I'm going to watch a couple of them this weekend.
I think so.
So I think I'll have to could do it. But seeing as we're here,
yes,
let's talk about a couple of other things. We'll keep this short because it is very late and this is going to be a short Clubhouse meeting. But I just had to, raise this because I watched Gravity, finally.
Oh, don't do that to us. Our resistance is low because we've just lost one of our comedy legends, and you're going to make me fight with you about Gravity?
I'm not going to make you fight at all, but I am going to say that I do disagree with you a little bit because I actually quite enjoyed it. Now, all right, just to put it into context, I watched it on
What did you say last week, Dave, to people who disagree with this?
Fuck you.
Fuck you. Put it into context, I didn't see it at the cinema. I had heard really mixed things about it. I just couldn't get to the cinema to see it. I picked it up on Blu-ray this week, Blu-ray 3D. I made sure I watched it in 3D. Give it everything that it's got going.
David McVeigh has a 3D television.
So I made sure I watched it in all its glory. And I have to say that I actually really enjoyed the film. Now, before you attack me, I agree with you. The script is junk. I mean, the bottom line is it's so overlaid with metaphor that it almost drowns itself. Mm. But a screenwriting teacher once told me when I was in film school, who said, we were actually discussing the Martin Scorsese film After Hours. And he actually said to me, he said, the reason he brought that film up in particular was he said, it is a perfect screenplay. Because, forget the words, forget the nuance, forget all that. A perfect screenplay, or the structure of a screenplay, is to go from a beginning to an end. Get your protagonist to go from one end of it to the other end and throw as many obstacles in their way as possible to overcome. That's a perfect structure of a screenplay. After Hours completely fits that bill. So does Gravity. Gravity basically has a beginning and it has an end. Stupid end, granted, but an end. And basically, it is one obstacle in her way at a time. She finally gets a ship, it's out of fuel. She finally gets to this, the radios don't work. She finally gets to this, whatever. The point is that as just a straight roller coaster, as a straight ride, so to speak, I actually really enjoyed it as the ride. Because it is one of the most extraordinarily well-made movies. And if he doesn't win the Oscar for Best Director, there's something wrong with the system. Because
that I agree with
it
you.
Is staggering how well-made this film is.
I don't
is.
Think it's a great script, though.
It's not a great script. But one of the things I said to Richard when I watched the special features, because one of the things that fascinated me was how the hell did they put this thing together? And to find out how much CG is in this film is
like
staggering.
90% of the film is CG.
Even their suits are CG. Everything about it is CG. Basically, they're in mock suits, and then everything in the environment is added. Hmm. But it's all wire work. Apparently, Sandra Bullock spent months in a gym getting ready for because it's all puppeteered. And she's on the special wire exact, like 12 wires, and it's all very interesting. But the thing that caught my eye more really is they show a shot in the making of that is the original first draft. And the title page on the script says, Gravity, a space adventure in 3D.
Yeah, okay.
And I just went, that is exactly, that sums up this film perfectly. It is a Disneyland ride. And it is literally things blowing up and people flying through space and got to hold onto this, got to grab that, got to do this. Mm. And I think it was summed up for me perfectly by my 14-year-old son who the doorbell rang 20 minutes into the film. It was the pizza guy showing up and we paused the film and he just looked over at me and goes, it's freaking me out, Dad. That's my opinion. I don't think it's a well-written film. I agree with you. I think the script is just, I think they tried too hard on the script to start with, but because they're trying to layer rebirth metaphors and all
this is my problem.
And I think it was just too much.
See,
but
because,
as an adventure,
that
I'm with it.
That precise layering of all that metaphoric, you know, allegory elements to Gravity is what makes it a different movie to what you just explained.
Yeah.
Like if it was just a roller coaster movie in space where she has to, you know, this problem happens, this gets compounded. Yeah, how will she survive? How will she get back to Earth? Then I would have been on board from the get-go. That's what I felt the movie was going to be.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was all a metaphor about, you know.
I completely agree with you. In fact, I think that's exactly what my problem with the film was. And also, I wasn't a huge fan of Sandy Bullock. I didn't think...
Oh, see, I thought she did a great job.
I thought she did a good job, too.
I really didn't. And because the whole time, I really wish they'd gone with someone unknown. Because I think half the time it was like, well, it's Sandy Bullock. You know, great, she's being really brave performance, she's not wearing makeup. Yay, her, yay. But for me, she was one of the barriers that stopped me from getting from beginning to end, you know. But I think, Dave, you've kept up exactly why I didn't like it. There was a point, and you were sitting next to me in the cinema, and I can't remember what comment I made at some point. And I said, yeah, all she needs to do is like get blown up now. I can't remember. And there was like, you know, because we'd both gotten to a point.
She needs to get eaten by a shark.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
That exact same thing when they hit the water. Here comes the shark.
Yeah. And you kind of think, because at that stage, it would have made sense. It's kind of like, well, they've thrown everything else at her. Why not that?
Yeah.
And to me, that was the ridiculous. All those obstacles, at one point, it was like, you're just getting ridiculous. Now it's just, you know what I mean? I was with it to a certain point. There was a certain point where I was so into that movie and I was like so with it and thinking, this is the greatest spectacle we're ever going to see. And then I let go and I drifted off into space and I never came back.
I'll add to that. For me, there was this very specific moment where the movie turned because I was enamored by Gravity from the beginning. And I still think the first 35 minutes of that movie is stunning. Like impeccable opening shot.
Absolutely. Is staggering.
Absolutely. But there's that specific moment where she contorts herself into a fetus.
Yeah, when she gets into the space station.
Where it just hit me like, wait a minute, this is not going to be the movie that I think it could be.
Yeah, that was your first obvious metaphor.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm floating here in the fetal position because I'm now comforted back
but
in the
room.
But
it was so obvious to the point of being condescending. Well, they could have done this in a real subtle, nice
Alfonso
way.
Cuarón actually talks about that in the making. He goes, and that's the moment of her rebirth, and she gets her curtains. You go, yeah, I got it.
Yeah, exactly.
And spoilers, people, is a very heavy-handed evolution metaphor at the end as well. So...
I agree with you. I think the metaphor is, I mean, that sequence where she's floating and she does go into the fetal position is a beautiful shot.
Absolutely.
It's gorgeous to look at.
The whole movie. And I'm not arguing it's that gorgeous shot. On a technical level, it's a beautiful
shot. But you sit there and go, okay, here it is. But my first argument to that entire shot is she gets into space and she immediately sheds all of her clothes. Why would you take off your spacesuit when you know everything is falling apart? Why wouldn't you keep your helmet and everything real close by?
Yeah.
you know what I mean?
This is one of those things that's interesting about Gravity is the first time I saw Gravity, I was a little bit unsure. You know, hey, there's some bits that work. There are some that don't work.
Oh, that's me in Prometheus, yeah.
But exactly, kind of the same thing. So you go back a second time. I went back a second time, watched it.
I've seen it twice. Yeah.
And then you start to see like how repetitive that film is. It's like, well, okay, I'm at a certain point. So what do I do? I'll check the instruction manual. I'll read the instruction manual and I'll get through. 10 minutes later, another problem's happened. I'll read the instruction manual. This time it's not in English, so I'll translate it. I'll get through. And you repeat that process until the end. You find out, okay, the movie is actually more simple than at first
it appeared. It's a very simple film.
Then the second layer is you, because we saw it before the film had came out. We saw a press screening.
We did.
And I don't mean that to brag, but I mean that to say that we saw this before this movie exploded. This was just an Alfonso Cuarón science film that nobody had really kind of heard about or been following.
And I went back to see it after it exploded in IMAX to see the spectacle, you know. And I still visually, the IMAX experience on this film, as you can imagine, phenomenal, particularly on the screen we've got here in Sydney. But I was picking apart those plot elements too.
And then, on top of what you're saying, Rich, I completely agree. And then when it leaves the cinema, you start to have all these like actual physicists and scientists start to talk about the film. And you have people like Neil deGrasse Tyson breaking down how scientifically inaccurate the movie is. And that might not be the fault of the movie or whatever, but these things get stuck in your mind. And then you return to it and you see like, it's like it just becomes in your mind. Maybe because of the hype machine, because of the interpretations. But to me, like, the movie became just an experiment in filmmaking.
But if you take any science fiction film and you put a bunch of experts, they're going to pick holes out of it. I mean, there's an entire book called The Physics of Star Trek.
No, because it's different in Gravity's case, because Gravity is pretentious, because Gravity pretends to be scientifically accurate. It pretends to be so in line and detailed and accurate. It gives people the wrong impression.
See, that's the thing. I don't think, personally, I don't think it did, because personally, I think it was a space adventure that was set in a semi-real world.
To be fair, it did run its entire campaign around how this is the most accurate space film.
Well, I think that came from a studio. If you actually hear Alfonso Cuarón talk about it, this is what was so interesting. He actually said, when they wrote Gravity, he said, this is going to be a little film we'll shoot in a few weeks.
Mm. But this is an interesting question, though. Can you now, in this information age that we live in thing,
believe anything?
Yeah. No. Can you separate the intention of the film from its marketing? Because the marketing of the film is now just as much a part of that film, a part film experience. And I think Dave's point before about us seeing it in a media screening weeks before, and this is probably the biggest argument you're going to have for free media screenings, is that critics can watch that film in isolation of all that hype that comes afterwards. Even something like the Lego Movie, you start getting people from both sides of the fence going, it's just about selling toys. It's against government. It's against business.
And this is why I think it is so...
Nothing is clean anymore.
I think this is why it is so important. And this is where gossip magazines... Like, I've had these arguments with even with my mother, who likes to read all the gossip magazines, and she judges films by the actor because of the exploits that happen off screen. You know what I mean?
But sometimes, and I think that's true as well, because there are certain actors I can't watch, Tom Cruise, for example, in very rare circumstances, without seeing Tom Cruise.
I know.
I don't see the actor anymore. And I think it's because their public persona is so huge. And that's part of that. You can't separate
that stuff. This is why I try, and I know it's hard, and I know it doesn't always work, but I really do try to, when I go see films, especially after my little mini breakdown with films a year ago, I was
breaking down with you.
Yeah,
man.
You were breaking down with me.
I was holding your hair.
We were basically kind of going, we don't want to be anything to do with this anymore because we hate the scene. This was all around the John Carter time as well.
Hunched over the porcelain bowl of criticism, holding back each other's hair.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons was because everything had become so negative. And it was around that time, and now that we're getting back into films, I'm really trying, and you can hold me to task anytime, but I'm really trying to separate the film from everything else, from the gossip, from the critics, and just taking the film on, did I enjoy it? Mm. Did I get something out
of it?
Which
has always been our philosophy on this show.
Absolutely. And it's really hard.
And it's almost impossible because we are people who are interested in film.
Yeah.
So we follow the stories about the films before they come out. And
absolutely.
So
and I think what we have to do is kind of...
And like you're watching special features like I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm always interested in how it's made. But I always watch special features after I've seen a film.
Oh, for sure.
That's the problem with us. Like, especially you and I, Dave, coming from filmmaking backgrounds.
Absolutely. And it's always
you to an extent as well, Richard, like, you know, having done some shorts and things like that.
I'm purely interested in the filmmaking process.
It's fair to say that all three of us here understand that basic idea is that making a film is such a near impossible achievement. Like, something like Gravity
interesting.
When you want to be a critic and when you want to read the film, it's kind of hard to like put away that filmmaker side of you and
really
judge it as a 2-hour movie.
Alfonso Cuarón is so funny because it actually reminded me of Zucker and Brown from the days of Jaws. Because when you read about Zucker and Brown and you read about the making of Jaws, they were so naive, they had no idea that they couldn't just train a shark. Right, they bought the rights to the book, and they basically said, "We'll just train a shark." And they had no idea. They had no idea how they were going to make Jaws. And when they started saying, "Maybe we can dress up a porpoise," anything they could do to try and figure it out.
I understand. Cuarón, what's his name again? What's the director?
Alfonso Cuarón.
Oh, yeah. Alfonso Cuarón. He just thought he could train a space.
He actually literally said. He said they wrote the script and they went.
What is it? Kubrick wanting to make an actual robot boy for AI?
Yeah. Well, there was all that. There was other wonderful.
Oh, what about the Barry Lyndon one of like wanting to cut off Ryan O'Neill's leg? Have you heard that story?
No.
That's such a story worth telling. Is that Kubrick hired six of the world's most famous doctors to come to the set of Barry Lyndon to convince Ryan O'Neill to cut his leg off for real, that he could get the reaction he needed, then they could 100% put the leg back on.
Reattach the leg.
And Ryan O'Neill flat out refused it.
Of course he did.
Yeah, I think he was wise in doing that.
Yeah, I think he was. So
it's an amazing story.
With Alfonso Cuarón, he wrote the script. He goes, it'll be, set in space.
Mm.
And we'll shoot it really low budget and it'll be a real quickie. And it was just meant to be this little two-hander.
And then people thought it was actually filmed out of space.
Well, the joke was he immediately, they said, okay, we'll make this film. And he goes, okay, so how are we going to do it? And then it was like, you can't just shoot it.
You know? Yeah. There are so many reactionary things to it as well. Like,
wasn't it a press conference where people got laughed at because they actually thought the film was shot in space?
Yeah.
But like, I think that's a great sign for the film that it convinced people. And I think visually that it convinced people that they were there. And on that level, I will agree that it's a successful film.
I sat there watching the film because, and as a filmmaker, I mean, as somebody who was trained as a filmmaker and knows so much about special effects,
you should be
I didn't know how they did it.
You should be saying that with a pipe in your hand. Yeah. I think that would be, you know,
as a filmmaker. I
was going to get wanky too and say, like, you know, as someone who reads a lot about real life science.
It's hard to wank with a pipe in your hand. Trust me.
Put something else in your hand. No, but like, I'm someone that
I don't know.
That
I don't know about you, but I often have a pipe in my hand.
No, but see, look at the reactions to Interstellar. I want to just move past this.
Sorry, last week's episode.
Go on, dude. You know Interstellar, the trailer that's come out where it's where people are going, oh, it's so boring. It's nothing but old footage of NASA and, you know, Matthew McConaughey saying some words. When you actually, this is real. This is why we're laughing, right?
This is before the reconnaissance.
You listen to what he's saying, and it's incredibly profound and powerful what he's saying about the current state of space exploration and what that means for man. And if you're an idiot, you just look at that and you kind of go, oh, well, space travel, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
You're kind of saying
but
stuff,
it's so important. And when you see a movie like Gravity that portrays space as something so horrifying, as something so scary, that's one element. Secondly, when you see a movie where the main character is someone who's not trained to be in space, that spends the whole time with vertigo and, you know, is not wanting to be there because she's sick or, you know, whatever, it paints like space exploration in such a way that isn't a problem when the movie's being made. But when it gets released, there is a major impact because this movie goes on to be the number one most successful movie of the year, which means it reaches the most amount of people. And the most amount of people's impression of what space is something so scary and horrifying that we shouldn't even go there.
Which is why I'm really looking forward to Guardians of the Galaxy, painting space as a fun place.
Well, you can just slap on a mask and survive in the vacuum of space. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that was really wanky and I hated that I said that.
No, I think it was great, but
I agree with you both. It was great and it was wanky.
I agree. I just want to say that
I liked the film though. I don't hate
when
the
I
film.
Was watching when I was watching.
Yeah,
Gravity,
I want to make it clear. I don't hate it.
Yeah, I think it's very, very, very clear that I actually sat there in mini sequences of the film going, were they using the Vomit Comet? For those who don't know, it's NASA's plane which allows weightlessness, which is how they shot Apollo 13. Yeah. But they had to do 15-second takes and stuff like that because that's all they got in weightlessness.
I want
to
go in one so bad.
Oh, I don't.
And I thought, we should get a chance.
And I'm sitting there going, did they shoot it in the Vomit Comet to achieve that effect? How much of this was CG? I'm sitting there looking at it going, I don't quite know how they... I was lost in the film because it's very rare for me to watch a film where I sit there and go, I actually don't know how they've achieved this. And then to see the special features where they're shooting them and they're in white dummy costumes, all the visors were CG. All the reflections were CG. There's even an Easter egg in the film. Alfonso Cuarón, as a joke, put it into the film where George Clooney flies past the camera at one point. You can see the camera crew in spacesuits visor.
Can you really?
They put it in CG.
In the actual film?
In the film.
Really?
It's a joke. And it's so quick that they actually pause it in the special feature so you can see it. Huh. But
that's really cool.
It's not real because it's all CG.
Yeah.
But they put the camera crew in it, and they actually pause it and goes, look, there's all the camera crew.
Have you been hearing this joke that Caron's been telling a lot lately because of the DVD release where he's saying that he had an original ending, which was that she'd get to the beach. Spoilers, everybody listening. She'd get to the beach and then Clooney would just fall and drop. Like, right. But he's so brilliant at telling this joke because he's so serious. And you know, you can kind of almost believe it.
Well, and it's funny because if you listen to him talking, there are more metaphors in that film than even we picked up on.
Then you can poke a stick at it.
Literally, it's all metaphor. He's literally listing them off, and I'm going, I didn't even get that.
Rich and I have been saying a lot of negative things about Cuarón, but I just wanted to like be really clear that one of the reasons I was so disappointed with this movie was that I'm such a big fan of Cuarón.
Yeah, me too.
Agreed.
I think Children of Men is one of the most phenomenal pieces of film in the decade.
And he's responsible for one of the best Harry Potter films.
He's responsible for the tone of Harry Potter, what made it so
amazing. What
changed
the tone, yeah.
And, you know, I'm a huge admirer of Et Tu M'Ambre Tambien, everything that he's made.
Love that film.
Yeah, so that's why I went into Gravity with probably, to be honest, let's be fair, expectations maybe too high.
And that could have actually been to my benefit because
And don't forget, he was one of the producers on Guillermo del Toro's Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, three of them with Alejandro González Iñárritu. Yes. Yeah, the three Mexicans.
So, I mean, talking to you guys and basically going, oh, Gravity, whatever. I think I went into it as a much more realistic expectation and kind of went, yeah, it's kind of a fun ride. You know, it's like I didn't feel the hate or the dislike or
anything. I misread it and I thought the movie was called Gravy. And I thought it was just going to be Sandy Bullock and George Clooney floating around in gravy for 2 hours. But that was just the last 5 minutes. So,
all right, so what I'm going to throw this out to the listeners, and I'm going to say I really liked it. Lukewarm on that side of the table.
Yeah, very clearly lukewarm. Not
phenomenally
hatred.
Well-made film.
Lukewarm gravy.
Phenomenally well-made film. See it. It's on Blu-ray, DVD now. See it. Make up your own opinions if you haven't seen it.
We're all good discs of salt.
And have another look at it because I think it is one that, whatever your expectations were, have another look at it now just as a roller coaster ride, just as complete escapism. And see what you think of it because it's a fun roller coaster.
You know when they say we're all good things are sold, like we're all good books are sold, we're all good DVDs
but
are sold.
But they're not all good there.
Does that imply that there's a place where all the bad DVDs are sold.
Student libraries.
I think it also
pick this book up where all bad books are sold.
It also implies that everything at a bookstore is good.
Yeah,
which doesn't make any sense.
That's not the all good, but all the good books are there.
So have we got any other business in the clubhouse today?
You've given your final
wrap up.
I guess I'll be buying the Blu-ray because, as Dave said, like the filmmaking is so amazing, and I hope he wins director tomorrow.
And I'll be getting a gravy boat. So just to relive that.
Is there any other clubhouse business?
I have one piece of business, sir, before we go. I need what to put before the clubhouse. A further piece of evidence as to why President Obama is still the geeks president.
Oh, please deliver.
Today I am joined by researchers who invent some of the most advanced metals on the planet, designers who are modeling prototypes in the digital cloud, folks from the Pentagon who helped to support their work. Basically, I'm here to announce that we're building Iron Man. I'm going to blast off in a second. This has been a secret project we've been working on for a long time. Not really. Maybe. It's classified.
And that is why he'll have a successful career as a stand-up when he leaves the presidency. Yeah,
don't you just love Obama?
Can't they just change the rules so we can do another 4 years?
Oh, I'd love that. I would love that so much.
Like Watchmen rules.
I reckon if he did it in another term, if they changed the rules, and that'll be like his like he's still got another couple of years. I reckon he will build Iron Man by the end of the presidency.
He had to kibosh the Death Star because it would cost too much, but maybe Iron Man's doable.
They could do. Yeah.
Iron Man might be doable.
Or at least the Iron Patriot. They could do that.
Iron Man is doable, hey.
I reckon Iron Man's doable.
I don't think he would be quite as sleek as Tony Stark's Iron Man because of power source, but
maybe like the first one.
He'd be pretty awesome, though, I reckon.
Yeah.
I want a real
excited
Iron Man.
By this prospect.
Yeah. I want to thank you so much for bringing suit, that to
me. I can't believe that was probably literally the biggest geek news of the week.
I love how he goes, you know, there are scientists that have built metals.
And people for the digital cloud.
he sounds like an old man, but in the coolest old man.
But I love the fact that he has humor with it when he goes, "We're building Iron Man." Not really. Maybe.
It's classified.
Good timing.
Oh, that man's a legend.
And on that note, I think we're going to wrap up this episode. I know it's a short one. We will come back next week. We're going to talk about 300 Rise of an Empire next
week.
Yes,
well, actually, it'll be our 300 week next week. Because over on Behind the Panels, which you can find on behindthepanels.net, you'll hear next week's special will be 300, the original graphic novel by Frank Miller. And then over on this show, we'll talk about 300 Rise of an Empire.
In detail. And we'll let you know what we think of it. Hopefully you'll get a chance to see it before the logo.
Yes. Well, I'm going to be betting all my life savings tomorrow on the Oscars. So maybe I'll be rich next week.
Have you got any shoe meals right on this one?
I have $1 million on Gravity.
All right, since we're here, give us your tip for best picture.
12 Years a Slave has to be. Because I think Gravity's going to win, but 12 Years a Slave should win.
I think Gravity should and will win Best Director. Yes. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind.
Who won the DGAs?
I think Alfonso Cuarón did, and I think he also won. I think he also won the Golden Globe.
The DGAs haven't been wrong in like 40 years or something. So,
except for the year of Color Purple,
there's no contest. That Gravity isn't amazing.
What was that?
Except didn't Spielberg win for the Color Purple and then got snubbed at the Oscars?
Yeah, that was the last time. I think American Hustle is going to surprise us with a few awards because it's been doing. It's won.
I hope not.
I don't think it was the greatest film either, but it's been sweeping the pools. So.
How's Scorsese's Wolf of Wall Street going to go?
I don't think it'll get.
No, anything. I think they gave him his accolades a few years ago, and for whatever reason, that's it for me.
Dallas Buyers Club was an exemplary film on the same quality as 12 Years.
This is really interesting because this conversation will be coming out about 3 days after the Oscars.
So it's going to be very interesting to see if we're.
I believe that. One.
right on. He did,
and I think that was the clear winner on the night because it was so good at doing.
Yeah, we'll make this clear that the Oscars are actually in, 12 hours?
Yeah.
15 hours?
I can't believe they cut off the visual effects artist halfway through.
Yeah. And I really think those comments that were made in the monologue were unfortunate.
Now, but more importantly than this, does anybody know who's been nominated
for the Razzies?
Oh,
because I haven't heard anything about the Razzies this year.
They came.
Adam Sandler have a film this year? Grown Ups 2 has got to be.
Grown Ups 2 has got to be.
No, actually, I do. I remember looking at them this year, and they were. It was a really, really stupid list because it was like normally that when they do the lists, it's kind of like really bad films. They seem to pick films that weren't that bad this year.
I'm guessing that Schwarzenegger and Stallone have got to be in there for that team-up film.
The worst picture nominations. I think they might have missed the cutoff.
I want to see that. have you seen that?
I haven't seen it, no. I also want to see Grudge Match, the De Niro and...
The worst picture, apparently, and this is why I thought it was stupid.
Stallone film.
After Earth, Grown Ups 2, Medea Christmas, Movie 43, but also The Lone Ranger.
Lone Ranger was excellent, people.
Which wasn't that bad a film. It was another example of a Disney film being assassinated.
I've watched Lone Ranger about 5 times. Have you guys watched
it? I haven't seen it. I've still
really?
Not seen it.
It's an amazing
movie. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But then there was really weird ones. I think that's right. Ashton Kutcher got nominated for Jobs as Worst Actor.
Oh, I don't believe that at all.
That's because they just wanted to nominate Ashton Kutcher for something. And that was the only movie he was
in. You know what? I actually, funnily enough, I think that After Earth will just sweep the awards because they hate M. Night
But Sylvester Stallone got nominated for Bullet to the Head, Escape Plan, and Grudge Match. It's been a fabulous year.
Oh, he'll take it then because he's got them all. So it's great. All right, we got to get out of here, guys.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for indulging us in our little tribute to Ramis.
Absolutely.
And telling David why he's wrong about Gravity.
we did win, though, hey.
We so won. Yeah, just in numbers alone. That movie was so about gravy.
David Longo, where can people find more of you on the internet?
Damn Good Cop and Twitter at Dave Longo. I just want to say there is a little documentary online called Life After Pi about the state of the visual effects industry in America that you really should check out, especially considering tomorrow's Oscars and the category there.
I gotta say, if Gravity doesn't win Best Special Effects,
give this documentary a watch. It's only half an hour, but it'll change your outlook on American Hollywood films.
Okay,
fantastic.
It's very important.
Richard, where can people find
you? I'll be watching Life After Pi, and you can also find me on Twitter frequently at DVDBits. You can find me at TheRealBits.com. You can find me on BehindThePanels.net. And you can also find me down at Victoria's Basement buying a brand new gravy boat.
Hey, that's where all bad books and DVDs are found, right?
and you can find me at GeekActually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. This has been our clubhouse. We are going to adjourn this meeting, and we'll be back next week for another a stimulating round of Geek Movie Club.
Stimulating, you say.
Until then, I'm David McVeigh.
I'm Richard Gray.
I'm Dave Longo.
We'll see you next week.